back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. The book is The Autoimmune Wellness Handbook, a do-it-yourself guide to living well with chronic illness. And it's a great book. It's beautiful. It's got great pictures. It's got some recipes that I'm very anxious to try out. Practical tips for lifestyle can turn the corner on autoimmunity. So, Mickey and Angie, what are some of the main components? We'll get to diet, but what are, you know, in a holistic approach to this, you know, what do you need to focus on?
Yeah, I actually love that you asked that first, because you know, a lot of people really focus on the diet, and that's, you know, a part of the recovery plan, but it's not the whole plan. So, you know, in our book, we focus on 7 steps to wellness. The first step is inform, so it's about learning about your condition and kind of how to advocate for your care. Collaborate, how to find a good practitioner, what type of practitioner you might need, how to work with them.
There's a lot of guidelines on how to find the right. Actually, you're not even about finding a unique guru to guide your care. You support the idea of a care team. You know, get a bunch of people, you know, who with different skills on your side to coach you in these different arenas. Correct.
Yep. And they're all led by you. You know, that's an important thing too, because I mean, that's what Angie and I discovered in our own journeys, is we had access to some great practitioners, but it wasn't any one that kind of put everything together. It was us, you know, taking that bird's eye view and guiding the process and really being informed and proactive about our care that really did it. So in collaborate, you know, we talk about putting all of that together. Nourish is about the diet, which we'll talk about. Rest is a chapter about sleep. So, you know, we put that after the diet about food, because often sleep is one of the hardest lifestyle bits for those of us with autoimmune disease to get in place. And that's because a lot of people with autoimmune diseases have impairments to sleep related to their condition. So it could be pain, you know, for instance, joint pain or nerve pain or something keeping you up at night. You know, it could be insomnia or, you know, different disruptions just to your routine. And honestly, if you're not sleeping, even if you're eating a perfect diet, it's really hard for those dietary changes in your body to really get that time that it needs in that restful and parasympathetic state to actually do all of the restoration, the regeneration, the repair. You know, it has an effect on stress management and everything. So sleep is kind of that first area that we suggest people tackle. And then from there, we have breathe, which is about stress management. So it's, you know, other than sleeping, usually sleeping goes a long way into helping people learn how to manage their stress, especially if they're not sleeping. But then we provide additional ideas about how people can manage their stress, because having an autoimmune disease is like a silent stressor. A lot of people aren't really aware at the toll of just having an autoimmune disease or multiple autoimmune diseases is stressing their body. And so we're less resilient than the average healthy person to all of this lifestyle mismatch that we're experienced to, you know, in our careers and the way that we structure our families, the way that, you know, we're engaging in our lives is just go, go, go. And there really isn't any off button. So,
and that's an important word, that's resiliency. An important part. And there are ways to cultivate and support resiliency. So your book talks about that.
Yeah. And for autoimmune disease, you know, this is a chronic lifelong thing. And even when you resolve most of your symptoms, like, you know, Angie and I have, we are aware that we are not as resilient as other people. That's what I would say now, having recovered from, you know the depths of.
Although he's on a great diet, but he's already preventing autoimmunity, but he's not.
Of course. Right.
I try to select the most recent example of resiliency in the face of adversity, which is a quarterback on the field down 25 points, being charged by massive 300-pound linemen and tackled to the ground repeatedly. and still coming up.
Yeah, but most people don't see an autoimmune disease as a 300-pound lineman, you know, and that's their problem is that they don't, he sees that challenge and he knows how to take care of himself in order to meet that challenge. Mm-hmm. But, you know, in our lives with autoimmune disease, I think we need to be more vigilant. I mean, everyone needs to be vigilant, but, you know, if you have an autoimmune disease, these things are even more important. So, you know, and then outside of stress management, you know, movement can be complex for people with autoimmune disease because some of us, are, like I was on this side of the spectrum, I moved way too much before I got my diagnosis.
Yeah, before I really your choice of words here is it's you have a chapter on movement, but it's not a chapter on exercise.
And no, so help us yeah, distinguish that's because picked up on that. Yeah.
Yeah. Movement is important. And, you know, if you're in splendid shape, you know, you can do an Ironman. But I think you have to find your sweet spot in terms of where the benefits exceed the downsides. And, you know, all too often, we see type A individuals pushing the envelope in all aspects of their life, even exercise, when maybe that's a detriment to their bodies.
Yeah. So, you know, again, talking about the stressors, you know, excessive exercise is definitely a chronic stressor. And for me, that was for sure the case. I was cycling, I was running, I was hiking. I was just always pushing my body to the limit. And that was my way of dealing with some of the early autoimmune symptoms, the fatigue. I thought, well, I just need to get fitter. I just need to get stronger. I just need to do more. And it was an unhealthy way of managing stress because as my stress was increasing, the more I needed an outlet. And I thought that the right thing to do was to overexercise. And, you know, that can be a big problem for people with autoimmune disease. So we talk a lot about just reaffirming, especially for women, you know, that sometimes less is more. You know, if you're someone like me and, you know, it doesn't apply for everyone. There are also people with autoimmune disease who are so afraid of the pain that they don't make any effort to get any movement. And, you know, I'm not talking about these people. That's another end of the spectrum. But, you know, yoga's okay. That's movement. That's moving and flexing and stretching. You know, walking is okay. Our bodies are designed for walking. Our ancestors walked for hours a day and, you know, they weren't specifically sprinting all the time or sitting all the time or doing activities that were intense for long durations of time or sitting in a static position where they're not actually moving in a long period of time. They actually spent a lot of time just on their feet, kind of milling around, doing different things, traveling slowly. And that's what our body responds really well to. And there's no surprise that, you know, that's an activity that we recover really well from for autoimmune. So mm-hmm. we talk a lot about that.
Gentle, like Qigong or Tai Chi. You know, sometimes I tell patients, you don't need to expend energy. You need to draw energy and consolidate energy into your body. And that's actually the philosophy behind certain traditional Asian practices like Qigong, which works with the breath, Tai Chi, and of course, yoga. Where you may be, you know, it's not trying to burn calories or increase your lung power or make yourself have big muscles. It's more about tuning up your system, opening up your chakras and your meridians, and you know, rebooting your autonomic nervous system.
Yeah, I love that. And I actually, when I was sick, I did Qigong. That was one of the first activities I was able to do. And it was suggested to me by a friend who's a Chinese doctor. And because of the meditative component, because of the slow restorative movement, and because of the, you know, it's almost like you're recharging your batteries, you know? And that's what we need is movement that actually recharges us and makes us feel energized and alive and ready to tackle our day, not movement that just makes us feel depleted, because that ultimately is going to take from the reserve that we have for our body to actually be fighting our autoimmune disease.
Different strokes for different folks, depends.
Are
we ready to tackle the diet? Because I was pleased to see, it's one of the main reasons that I selected this book for discussion, is that I think you're right on target with advocating a paleo diet for patients with autoimmunity. I think that's a great move. You can't go wrong. But what is the rationale for undertaking a diet like the paleo diet? And there's some misconceptions about paleo diets. I think people think it's just all, you know, carnivorous and eating tons, massive slabs of meat and no carbohydrates whatsoever. That's not what you're after, right?
No, definitely not. You know, the idea behind the autoimmune protocol, which is basically a version of the paleo diet developed specifically to help those with autoimmune disease, you know, manage their diseases, is to calm inflammation, eventually balance the hormone systems, and help in other ways that bring the whole thing back into balance and kind of calm the process that's happening. It can be somewhat restrictive from the outside. It can seem somewhat restrictive and give that impression that it's only meat. But actually, it's pared down to the most nutrient-dense foods you could be eating. Generally, we're eating more vegetables than vegetarians on any given day.
Yeah. That's what I noticed when I went paleo because right. You know, I put the toaster away. And when you do that, you know, you got to eat more vegetables. You know, it's convenient to, you know, get – even if you're using gluten-free bread, you know, slather some butter or nut butter on a gluten-free piece of toast and you fill yourself up. But when you don't have that, you got to look to real, you know, not grains, not processed ingredients, real fruits.
Right. You've got to turn to kind of the dense sources of vegetable carbohydrates instead to kind of round out the macronutrients in your diet. And so you start eating tons of great vegetables that are just packed with nutrients. The meats that we do focus on for protein sources are generally as high quality as possible. You know, we're getting a lot of the omega-3s out of these meats, you know, grass-fed beef, oily cold water, wild fish, wild caught fish like salmon, you know, these kind of meats. And then we also focus on adding in some other really nutrient dense things. It's not just about elimination. So we bring in bone broth, maybe gelatin or collagen, a lot of fermented foods. And in that protein category, the organ meats.
Which are actually interestingly in a variant of this by someone who's making a big splash, has a big presence, is Dr. Terry Walls, who focuses on a form of autoimmunity, which is MS, and she attributes her recovery to a diet very similar to that, emphasizing organ meats as a source of protein because she believes the organ meats have a more complete nutrient profile than just muscle meat.
Yes, exactly. I mean, they're the powerhouses of all foods in terms of nutrient density. You know, we love Terry here and couldn't agree with her more about the best way to kind of feed those little engines in our cells. They need all that nutrient to go. So, you know, that's kind of it in a nutshell. It's not as complex as people might think.
So why does that seem to help? I mean, you've done some research and you put some substantiation for to give the rationale for the diet in your book, but what is, you know, I know that you're not, you know, university biochemists, but you guys are pretty astute. You've done, you know, your research on why might this be helpful.
So really this is helpful for a variety of reasons. So that, you know, Angie touched on the nutrient density piece and, you know, our immune systems really need a certain amount of nutrients in order to do their job well. But the biggest research was done by Dr. Sarah Ballantyne in her book, The Paleo Approach. And she really dug into the research about all of these foods and how they interact with the gut lining. So it could be, you know, the lectins in grains, prolamins, different anti-nutrients, you know, even nuts and seeds have some anti-nutrients. And these are compounds that basically the reproductive part of these plants, so the seeds or the nuts or the grains or the legumes, they basically develop this in order to protect themselves from their environment. And that makes them Either they bind to other nutrients in the gut or they irritate the gut.
These are
Sometimes they
so-called
pass
lectins,
through the
right?
gut. Yeah, I mean, there's various categories, and Sarah has it really broken down well in her book, the lectins, the prolamins, the different protease inhibitors and anti-nutrients, and the various categories of food all have varying degrees of these different things. But basically, any food that has a potential to irritate the gut or cause this leaky gut, which is kind of the foundation of autoimmune disease. Most autoimmune diseases tested have this common leaky intestinal barrier, and that's how undigested food particles get into the bloodstream, and then the immune system has to deal with them. And that's important because the immune system is the one that, is mistakenly attacking our bodies. So when it has this bigger job, it's like dumping a huge pile of work onto its lap, saying, "Hey, sort all this out. I'm going to eat whatever I want. Your gut's going to be super irritated, and now you have to kind of make sense of all of this." The diet really removes all of those foods that are potential triggers. And there are even other triggers that are like solanine and the nightshade vegetables, which a lot of people are surprised by.
What's your position on it? Because what's different about some paleo diets is that they're maybe not specifically targeted to autoimmunity. They say, okay, have tomatoes, green peppers, and potatoes. Those are fine. If you're sensitive to them, avoid them. But avoids them, right?
Yeah, nightshades are generally considered paleo. They are not included on the autoimmune protocol because, especially patients with autoimmune disease, and even more specifically, people that have any joint issues
like
is really common.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's and even like Hashimoto's can have joint pain as a symptom. I experienced extreme joint pain whenever I have nightshade family vegetables, and different vegetables have a different levels of these different compounds. So for some of them, it's solanine that's the culprit. It could be some other compounds. But, like white potatoes have a very low amount. And over time, I've been able to reintroduce some white potatoes to the point where I don't get a reaction from them. But tomatoes, I still have a crazy reaction. My joints swell up. I can't actually even make a fist. My fingers hurt really bad. So part of that elimination reintroduction process is then figuring out it doesn't mean that all these foods are never going to work for someone forever, but it's basically gives you an opportunity to create an elimination diet that gets all of these potential triggers out, and then you can actually see which ones work for you and which ones don't. And everyone's different on that front.
Indeed. So what's a typical breakfast? It's not Kellogg's cornflakes with skim milk, got a glass of orange juice, right?
Yeah. Definitely not. I think that this is a good area to bring up because it's an early hurdle for a lot of folks. You really need to think outside of the breakfast box and maybe take some cues from the rest of the world outside of the U.S. A lot of us eat really nutrient-dense soups for breakfast, filled with a lot of different kinds of greens and other vegetables. I think a pretty common one that Mickey and I eat pretty often is maybe some apple slices with beef liver pate and maybe some fermented foods.
Yep.
So we power up with those organ meats.
Your photo stylist did a great job of making the food look really appetizing. But actually, many of your breakfast meals are high in protein. With beef or pork or other sources of protein.
Right. Starting your day with that protein and some fat is like putting logs on your internal fire. It's going to be a very steady source of energy for, a good part of the day and help the blood sugar remain really steady. It's like wearing a battery pack.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, I love many of your recipes here. Emerald salmon with zesty green sauce. I'm going to try that out. Beef curry soup. That sounds really good. I like your Thai seafood chowder. Dairy-free, of course, made with coconut milk, I guess.
Yes.
And bone broth.
Correct.
Looks very
yeah, good. I think people will discover these recipes aren't weird. A lot of people see the list of food to include and avoid, and they're like, what am I going to eat? And then when you look at our recipes, you'll see, an AIP version of a chili. It just doesn't have tomatoes or, like that Thai seafood curry. they use coconut milk in Thai food. That's, you know, anyway. That's a part of what that that culture's food is. So a lot of these things are not a far stretch. The ingredients are not weird things that you're going to have to find some strange store. We really tried our best to make it approachable that even people who, you know, only have access to, say, a Walmart can make all of the recipes in the book, because that's where a lot of people are at. You know, they don't have access to kind of some weird, funny ingredients. This is really just interesting ways of eating meat and vegetables and fruit and good, vibrant, fresh food.
And what's your take on sugar?
So the autoimmune protocol is not necessarily a completely no sugar diet, but we take an extremely low sugar approach, and we try to focus on, you know, more natural sweeteners that may have some nutritive quality to them. You know, maybe a little honey or a little maple syrup, maybe a little coconut palm sugar, something like that. But we stay away from kind of these like ultra processed, highly addictive sugars. For instance, you will not see any high fructose corn syrup in an AIP recipe.
Indeed. Well, it's all very sensible. It's all very doable. And it's all very familiar to me because in spite of not having, fortunately, an autoimmune disorder, I'm doing it for health and prevention, and I feel great. So in conclusion, give us some resources that listeners can access. First of all, I highly recommend the Autoimmune Wellness Handbook, a do-it-yourself guide to living well with chronic illness. Oh, and by the way, there is one other thing I wanted to talk about, which is in the front of the book. You have an interesting questionnaire, which is a questionnaire for people who have not necessarily been diagnosed with an autoimmune disorder, but it's, are you at risk for an autoimmune disorder? Can you speak to that for a moment?
Yeah, so basically we kind of subscribe to the mode of thought that autoimmune disease exists more on a spectrum than black and white. And, you know, that definitely lines up with our personal experience. And a lot of people get those early symptoms that are really easily brushed off. And it would just be really nice to kind of know where you fall on that spectrum based on kind of what you're experiencing rather than waiting until you have a full blown autoimmune disease. So these are things that, like, by the time, you know, you have rheumatoid arthritis, you know, your joints are all swollen, you're in a lot of pain, you can barely walk. You know, identifying these symptoms early on can hopefully streamline that process for a lot of people. Maybe they can make some of these natural changes and they can reverse whatever has happened early on, because that's the easiest way I think people have to be successful. You know, the longer and the more deep-seated that illness is, the harder it's going to be and the more likely it's going to be that people need these additional medications and things to you know, function well in their life. So that quiz, you know, we designed so that everyone can take the quiz and just kind of see if they're experiencing some of those early signs. You know, for me, the first sign of my autoimmune disease was a numbness and tingling of my fingertips. And I experienced this for a couple years before I started having the hair loss. And I just wish that I had known at that point. I would have just gotten diagnosed so much faster had I known, you know, that that was an early sign of a thyroid condition, you know. So that's what we're hoping that quiz does for people.
Indeed. Other potential symptoms, and not all these symptoms necessarily correspond to autoimmunity, but if you have a sufficiently high score, it's well worth investigating whether you have a subclinical form of autoimmunity. Morning stiffness, feeling puffy or inflamed, dry eyes, mouth, or skin, dermatitis or itchy skin, cold hands or feet. You know, I just wrote an article on Raynaud's syndrome, which is cold hands and feet. And, you know, a lot of people have cold hands and feet, and they don't necessarily have autoimmunity. It's just sort of that's the way it is. But it can be a harbinger of a more serious autoimmune condition. It's Raynaud's, where you get painful white fingertips, even sometimes with exposure to air conditioning. That could be...
Or putting your hand in the freezer section of the grocery store. This was an early one for me in my 20s. I wish I would have known.
Yeah. Of course, difficulty concentrating, brain fog, you know, that's part of it, hair loss, and et cetera. Okay, so what additional resources would you recommend for people? You have a website, presumably.
Yeah, so we just rebranded. The website I started about 5 or 6 years ago was called Autoimmune and Paleo, and Angie and I partnered 2 years ago, and so we not only co-authored the book, but we write together on the website, and we recently relaunched as Autoimmune Wellness because we wanted to move the conversation not away from food, but we wanted to make it easier to include things like sleep and stress management and connection and some of these other things that we talk about in the autoimmune wellness journey. We also have a podcast called the Autoimmune Wellness Podcast. We did a season that corresponded with every chapter of the book. So we interviewed experts and we gave our personal stories in depth in that season. And we're recording a season 2 right now. Okay. And on our website, autoimmunewellness.com.
That's why you guys sound so good today, is you guys are experienced
broadcasters. Well, I'm glad to think we sound good because we've had a lot of practice, come a long way. But it's, you know, it's not easy talking on the fly, but we're doing our best. But on our website, we have great free resources because we really believe that we want every patient to have access to this information, whether or not they can afford a book or not. So our website has hundreds of recipes. We have a meal plan. We have a whole quick start guide if you sign up for our email list. So that's a great place for people to get started if they're maybe unsure about the process, want to know a little more about it, or if they just want to use those resources and hit the ground running, they can totally go for that.
And what's the website?
It's autoimmunewellness.com.
Autoimmunewellness.com, same as the title of the book, the Autoimmune Wellness Handbook. And do you guys work individually with patients? I mean, you're both certified practitioners, nutrition practitioners.
We do each work with individual clients as well. Folks can find us at the Paleo Mom Consulting.
Okay, great. For individual guidance in implementing these types of programs. We didn't talk about supplements, but I think your preference is to utilize food. You take kind of a conservative approach to supplements, leaving it perhaps to others like me to administer supplements to patients who are not responding to food alone. But your philosophy is diet first, and then, you know, other concentrated supplements, maybe with ingredients like curcumin, higher doses of vitamin D that you can get from, you know, ordinary foods. These things play a role, of course. Omega-3 supplements in lieu of massive amounts of fish. But that's not actually so much the thrust of your book. You're mostly talking about lifestyle modification. Right.
Yeah, it's about, you know, what people can do for themselves. And, you know, we hesitate to recommend too many additional things because honestly, supplements are expensive, especially when, you know, everyone's trying all of the things that happen for all the people that they've heard on the internet, whatever else they tried. We'd rather them focus their priority of their budget on food and then, you know, connect with a great collaborative doctor like you, who can help them figure out which of those supplements is actually going to provide them the biggest bang and help them get better. Because, you know, we're all for using all the tools in the toolbox we can to get better. And, you know, supplements can be very powerful, but they can also be a drain on the savings if they're not the right one, you know?
Well said. I agree completely. Well, thank you very much, both of you, for joining us. And, you know, your book is great. It's really beautifully done and reflects a tremendous amount of work and personal experience on your part. And it's also very compassionate towards sufferers. And the message, I think, is a very, very reassuring one, that there can be a path to wellness, even if you feel a little lost in the wilderness, coping with perplexing symptoms and a dire prognosis. So thanks for writing it. And thanks for being a resource to the community of literally millions of people out there with autoimmune disorders.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Mickey Trescott and Angie Ault. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Thanks for joining us.